Good morning, everyone. My name is Daniel, just in case you don't know. And if you haven't noticed, I'm not English. I'm from Spain. I'm married to Martha, my wife. And because I'm not English, so if you get bored or you don't understand anything, just do as I did when I first came to England. Just use your imagination. And you may end up with a different sermon, but that's right. Well, I wasn't quite sure about feeling happy or not about preaching on Romans, because it's the most difficult letter of Paul, I think. So I wasn't sure what Stuart meant by offering this opportunity to me, really. Never mind. I like to say that this passage that we've been reading inspires me this nice sentence that you sometimes hear, which is, "Do as I say, but not as I do." I hope you don't hear that very often, really. And I hope you don't use it at all. But there are a group of people that seems to fit quite well in this category, and they are politicians. They are very keen on saying things that would like to do if they are elected, and not so keen in delivering those promises later. Not all of them are like that, of course, but we know. And the consequence is that people are less interested in politics every time. So we are becoming a bit wary of politics, and when it's time to vote, every time less and less people is going to vote. We Christians shouldn't really be counted in those group of people who talk a lot but do very little. And I'm not quite sure that we really fit or not in this category. Nevertheless, that's not Paul's case. He's probably the greatest theologian of all times, and yet he's very down to earth, and he's always keen on giving advice on how to live and put into practice what he said, which sometimes is very difficult. And that's what he does in chapter 12 of Romans, the one that we've just read. In the first two verses of this very well-known passage, we find a demand: be a living sacrifice. But right before that, the passage starts with "therefore," which means that this passage is linked with what we've heard before. So if we want to understand what he's saying now, we need to remember at least what he's been saying in the previous chapters. So, the letter of Romans can be mainly divided into sections, chapters 1 to 11, which are the heavy stuff, where Paul explains all his theological arguments and very complicated things, and then chapters 12 to 16, where he tries to put or encourage us to put into practice what he's been saying before. So chapter 12 is really the beginning of this practical section. Now, I'm trying to summarize 11 chapters of Romans in 2 minutes or so, so it's going to be difficult, but I'll try. Paul is writing to the churches in Rome, and there seemed to have been some tension between Jews and Gentiles. And, well, Gentiles were the majority now in the church, and they thought that Jews were a bit weird because they were trying to keep some of the old traditions. And, of course, Jews thought that Gentiles were wrong. So Paul has to come and put things into perspective. And he says that, well, yes, Jews are the chosen people. Not because they are special in any way or any good, but purely by grace. And actually, Jews have seen as much as we have seen, we Gentiles. So from the beginning of history, salvation has been through faith and by grace, not by being Jew or having the law. And actually, Abraham, the greatest of all Israel fathers, was saved because he had faith in God. And so he received grace. And that was before Israel even started to exist or the law was even given. So this means that under God's wrath, we all are sinners, both Gentiles and Jews. But under God's grace, we all can be saved, both Gentiles and Jews, if we have faith. And it means that Gentiles that before were not part of God's people are now part of God's people. And some Jews that thought they were part of God's people find themselves out of the chosen ones. Are you still with me? And, yeah, good. However, at the end of this theological section in chapters 9 to 11, we find a quite worrying warning from Paul. And is this warning that links directly with our passage today. And Paul in chapter 11 is saying to us Gentiles that we must be careful not to make the same mistakes that Jews made. For in the same way that Jews or some Jews were cut out of the olive tree, we too can be cut out of the olive tree. And I'm glad that I don't really have time to go deep into that passage, which is very difficult, but the warning is there. And this is where our passage starts now. And the demand of being a living sacrifice has to take this into account. So I guess this warning basically means that we are saved by grace, not by what we do. Adding any personal merits to our salvation, as companies would say, makes the warranty void. So if we try to say that we've been saved just because we are good or any better than anyone else, we're just making God's work useless, because we are basically saying that we can achieve salvation by ourselves and we don't need God anymore. And we are also saying that we are better than the rest of the people in church because we have achieved it, whereas the others actually have received it. So in the patterns of the world, where personal merits are very important, you know, self-made people, this doesn't really mean that we can't be proud of what we do or what we achieve. Of course we can. But in the community of faith, we must remember that it is not what we do, but what God has done for us that it counts. And if what we achieve comes into the way between our brother and I and affects the way we look at our brothers and sisters in church, then things are not going well. So Paul wants us to live as living sacrifices, to live a life worthy of the calling we have received. Paul wants us to show in our lives that we live by faith and that we know that it is by grace that we are here, not by what we do. So after 11 chapters of very deep theological discussion, he wants to give us some advice now on how to live this living sacrifice style of life. So up to now, Paul has just said that he wants us to be living sacrifices, and now in the following verses he's going to give some practical advice on how we can do that. And there are two main areas where he wants us to give us advice on. And the first one is that he wants to be living sacrifices, first and foremost, here within the church, with our brothers and sisters. So in the church, we serve one another, but it is not just serving that counts. It is also the way we offer this service in the church that can really show or deny the reality of our Christian life. So serving is good, but if the driving force behind it is just to show that we are better than the others, then it's not quite right. Because you must remember that we are supposed to show that we are saved by grace, not by how good we are. So it is by grace that we are here, and it is by grace that we have been given the gifts that we have. And it is by grace that we can offer something back to the church. Paul reminds us that we all have a gift, at least one gift. And this doesn't make us any better than the person sitting next to you, because he or she has also received one gift that is supposed to be using to help the church grow. So as in the normal body, we all need one another. And because we all contribute to the well-being of the body, we can't say that we don't need, or we just don't want to use what we have been given. If someone is not working properly, the whole body is in danger. And if someone is not serving with the right attitude, then the whole body is at risk. Now, in a church like this one, like in Alma, where many people is at university or has PhDs or work in big companies or important jobs, that is quite a risk. Because it's very tempting to think that we have achieved more than other people because we have a certificate that says so, or because we do a lot more things in church than other people, maybe. But this is not a way of showing grace, really. It's not a Christian showing that we live by faith because we've received grace. It's rather a Christian showing that we still live under the law and the burden of the law. And that's not how we are supposed to be living now. So having shown that the right attitude of serving is by being humble and showing grace rather than merit, Paul now wants to make sure that we don't forget something important. Everyone has received a gift, so it is everyone's responsibility to put it into work, to give it back to the church. As Paul says somewhere else in Corinth, we have been given gifts to build up not our own self-esteem, but the body of Christ. And this has some implications. First, some implications for the leadership in the church. No matter how good a team is, they can pretend to be able to do everything in church. And sometimes leaders are afraid of giving power away or just worried that people might not be ready to do things, or even some just like the way things their own way, so they know if they offer work to do to other people, they won't do it their way. But a good leadership team should be actually watching what people can offer to church, what are the gifts in the community, and offer the chance to use them, help them to put it into practice, and give the chance so the church can grow and benefit from those gifts. As in a normal body, the brain just cannot say, I can do everything, because a body will die this way. And a church is in the same risk, actually. It is always easy to point to the leaders in charge, because they are there in front, so we can just point. But on the other side, every one of us has also responsibility. And if we know we have at least one gift, we have to use it. It is good if you know what is your gift, so you can really do something about it. And that's the first step, know your gift. The second one, it's obvious, just use it. If you are not given the chance to use it, for whatever reason, just keep trying. Because if you have that gift, people will see it sooner or later. So just find different ways to do it, or I don't know, it doesn't really have to be here in front of everybody. It can be done in many different ways. So in the same way that in a healthy body, every member plays a role, in a healthy church, there shouldn't be a member that is not also a servant to the others. So if you are not doing your part, Alma is missing something vital. So Paul is said that he wants us to be living sacrifices in the church. But he wants us to also go out and move out the walls of the church. And he says in verses 9 to 21 that we also should be a living sacrifice in all our relationships with our friends, with our relatives, but also with people we meet at work, in the university, in our neighborhood, everyone that just pops up into our life. So, well, I know this is not very easy, and it certainly wasn't easy for Romans, for Christian Romans at that time. They have been persecuted. The Christian Jews had been expelled from Rome for a few years. So Christians were a bit like, you know, like Marmite. You either hate it or love it. And they were feeling the pressure of not being accepted in society. And I guess conforming to the patterns of this world would be a lot easier. Because, I mean, it's very easy just when someone is making your life difficult just to let your inner evil come out and just smack that person's face. But since we have received grace, we have to give grace. And the only way we can do that in a rational way is if we work and try to have and grow a genuine love. That's not very easy, really, because especially in a society which is feeling-driven and love is at top of the list. And now Paul is asking in verse 9 that we have to show genuine love. How can we do that? Well, I think it's because we put the wrong end of the meaning of love, really. We are a lot far from what Paul was thinking. If love is just feelings, and we cannot do it, there's no way we can feel anything nice about, well, you know, some of those person that you know in your daily life. So love has to be something else, and I think we've lost a bit of the meaning. Love is also, or should be also, a commitment, a decision of doing something no matter what. We take the decision of acting in favor of one person. And it is when we understand love this way that we can really show love even to those that we really don't like. So it is with this kind of love that we can look at verses 10 to 21 and make sense of them and think, well, yeah, we can achieve that. Because what Paul is asking is that we live out our faith and that we show to others the grace that we've received before. And that includes showing grace to people that we like, also to people that we just tolerate, and also people that, well, just better don't say what we think of them, really. So Paul is not asking just to put up with them, he's asking us to do something active to be good to them. And it is here where this kind of love comes into play, when we decide to really do something. Not, we don't have to wait to feel, because we won't feel it, really. We just act and decide to be good to our friends, but also to those who are not so nice to us. And we decided not because Paul says so in Romans, but because we were God's enemies once, as Paul says in Romans 5, and now we've received so much grace that we cannot do otherwise, really. Because freely we have received, freely we should give, say Jesus in Matthew 10. For instance, when we read that parable in Matthew 18 about that servant that was forgiven this huge debt, and then he went out and he could not forgive his fellow servant who owed him just a small amount of money. And we think, oh, he was really mean. Well, we are like that if we are not able to show to people around us just a bit of the grace that we have received. So we can even really try sometimes to be nice to those annoying people at work or at university, or you can fill the gaps and put the names of people you know. So it is now time to sum up. This is what Paul means by being a living sacrifice. We should live in a way that shows that we live by faith, and in a way that shows that we have received grace. And it is God that has given all this to us. It is not that we have been so good that we deserve it. It's just God's decision to be good to us. We still have to do good, but not because we have to achieve anything, but because we have received so much that we want to share that with others that don't have it. And so Paul takes us down to earth and shows us how we can do that in church and in our relationships with people around us. And always bearing in mind that we can serve by grace, and that we can show love because we have received love first. If you remember, I started saying, "Do as I say, not as I do." And that's a bit of a challenge, really, to me. And I hope it's a challenge I can really deal with, even if it's just to start. And I hope you feel at least a bit the challenge. Because I don't think it is by chance that in our Western world, churches are being left empty, really. I think people outside may feel like we are a bit like politicians sometimes. We talk a lot about what we feel, about what we believe, but we don't show it really that much, or they don't feel we show it. Is it maybe that those people outside, there are lots of unhappy people out there, and there are people looking for alternatives. They are not looking into the church, really. And I wonder if it's because they see here just the same but in a different format, or because, contrary to what Paul is asking, we are shaped actually in the patterns of this world. I don't have the answer really, but I think it's good to think why people is not looking into the church as an alternative when we say we are. I'd just like to finish by reading those first verses, but on another version. "I urge you then, brothers, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. And do not copy your behavior from this world, but let the renewing of your minds transform you." Thank you.